do anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. Okay, well, welcome back to what is now the third episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. My name is Pete Dealey, and I'm here with Professor Lucas Hubo.
Welcome back, guys. One more time, a pleasure to be with all of you here, and thank you so much, Peter.
Oh, I'm excited to continue our conversations. And we've talked about other people, you know, why would other people want to do jiu-jitsu? What might keep them from learning jiu-jitsu? But I know that you began early relative to a 50-year-old old guy, you know, super, super early, probably not as early as some of the people in your community, right? So you, it may not be early from your perspective, but it's early from my perspective. And I wanted to ask you about those days. And I wanted to, you know, say, or ask you the question, like, what was it like when you first started to learn jiu-jitsu? Maybe you talk a little bit about like why you even decided, I know you like sports in general, like why you decided to go in this direction and why you're not on the World Cup team or the diving team or whatever. Well,
probably because I couldn't make it, but let's not talk about that. So growing up in Brazil, love to practice all sports, be lucky enough to have a family where sports were something super integrated on our daily basis. My mom always doing like working out and things like that. My dad, even though he's not a professional athlete, that's not how he has his living, but he's someone that has a survival course on forest, for example. He did the Tour de France when he was 50. Yeah, 50 years or 48 or something like that. He did the Tour de France. So he was always someone super committed to activities.
So let me just because I'm a cycling fan. He was a competitor in the Tour de France, or he did the course?
He did the Tour de France. He has a medal.
Oh.
I don't even know if the Tour de France is still do that, but well, if you don't know Tour de France, maybe Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but the biggest cycling tournament.
Yes, without a doubt.
Right, I believe it's 2 weeks, one or two weeks.
Tournament.
And different tests and everything else. One day per tour, they allow amateurs.
Oh, that's
amateurs,
right. That's right.
To compete, right? Yeah. But it's not anyone that goes there. You have a trial to be able to be there. You just submit your time and everything. And my daddy, he always was a big fan of cycling. So he was doing that for many, many years.
Right.
But again, he was not professional. That's why not he living. He works in the bank and well, successful in that, but he just loved and he's super strict on what he decided to do.
Wow.
Right. So he did that once. And even though it's for amateurs, but you have a time limit for every, I think it was on a little bit over 100 miles fast on his day.
Right.
And he was able to complete that. Anyway, it was a big accomplishment. But coming back on talk a little bit how I started, I just love
Hold on, can I get your dad on this podcast? Can I get... That's a fascinating guy. That's it. We got to talk to him. All right. So they say listen, for those of you who are not cyclists, like, I don't think that people really, when they see these people going up the mountains and whatnot, I'm 100% confident that if you haven't had the experience of going up a mountain on a bicycle, that you have any appreciation of what's going on there. Those guys are as beastly as any athletes in the world. So the fact that this is a man who's got a professional life and was, never mind got a medal, but sufficiently capable, I mean, that's...
And he was, I think he was close to 50, I would say 47.
So a young man from my perspective. The kid when you're my age. That's a remarkable. So you come out of an environment of serious athleticism. I mean, that's not a hobbyist. Somebody is really disciplined.
My mom, she played volleyball in high school, things like that. Mm-hmm. But she likes, she enjoys, she does as much as she can now, physical activity. Mm-hmm. And early on, I was always playing soccer. I played tennis for many years, but I also always into martial arts. I did karate for a couple of years with my uncle, having the biggest influence. He was already a black belt when I started. So I was always like looking up to that. I did kung fu for another year and a half or two. And a little bit before jiu-jitsu, actually, I started to train boxing. Mm-hmm. So that was like 2002, 2003. So I was 12 to 13 years old when I started boxing. And one of my best friends back then, his name is Danilo, he was already an orange belt in jiu-jitsu. So that's, for those who doesn't know, jiu-jitsu has a different belt system for kids and adults.
Oh, okay.
An orange belt for kids would be equivalent maybe a purple to brown belt in adult. So it's okay. A pretty higher rank for a kid.
Right.
And like kids, we always chasing each other and like, well, I do box, I did karate, you do jiu-jitsu, what's that? You're hugging each other. just making right. The jokes that people usually do about jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And one day I decided to just join in a class. But that was different times, right? Like it's not early on like the other guys on 90s, 80s, 70s when things were pretty rough. But I would say it was way different than okay. It is today. My very first class, we didn't have a gi to use and they didn't have a gi to allow me to use. So I literally did with a pair of jeans and a t-shirt the whole class.
Wow.
And sparring full on right away with adults and getting smashed and not understanding what was happening. But for whatever reason, I like it. I think I like the physical challenge. I think that was fascinated me the most. Being able to fight, right? Like in a controlled environment, like we were talking before. And I just stick with, love it. Start to train more and more. Why we start like once or twice a week, it became three and then four and then five and then six times a week. And I, at the same time, I had have a cousin that was always, you know, those cousins that we look up to. He's about 10 years older than me. And he was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu and I never knew. And then we started to get even closer after that. So I started pretty much because of my best friend and my cousin. That was what those who introduced jiu-jitsu to me.
So you had a pretty varied physical life. Like you were playing a lot of different things. You were training a lot of different martial arts. So you had exposure to a lot of things. And was it sort of the community of your friends and your family that ultimately had you investing more of your energy in jiu-jitsu? Is that kind of what tipped you over into studying jiu-jitsu more than all those other different things? Is that fair to say? Or was it something more inherent in jiu-jitsu that spoke to you as an athlete?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because like I said, my mom, even though after 18 years, she still doesn't pronounce jiu-jitsu the right way. She doesn't know exactly what it is. And like every mom, she was always afraid of me getting hurt. Every injury that ever coming back, eventually, right, you would get one injury or the other, depending on how intense you train. So every injury that I was having was always, why are you doing that? Why you do that with you? That doesn't make any sense. But like, just looking the best for me, right? And my dad was, whatever I decide, he was always there for me. He even trained box a little bit with me.
Right.
So I thought it was a great combination as trying to defend myself in case I need. And I was never a person that who was fighting at school or nothing like that. That's
right. Totally
not me. And maybe one of the reasons because that, like since early on, I was already in martial arts one way or the other. But jiu-jitsu just, I think maybe because the physical challenge and I have great memories on that time. So the community was also something that changed for me, the perspective. Since day one, representing Gracie Barra, I was lucky enough to found that school that is represent the team until now on those years.
Right.
So yeah, I have great professors, great training partners, great community overall.
Did your mom ever come to your early competitions?
Never.
She never
one
got
time.
To.
I would time? Say one time.
What
one
happened? Time. Did she freak out? Was it?
So on that day that she went, actually, the person that I was supposed to fight didn't show up. So I ended up not having a fight on that day. That was funny enough. But my dad, he was the one driving me to the places, right?
Right.
On every tournament. My very first tournament was in São Paulo, and I'm from Campinas. That's about like 45 minutes to an hour drive. And I was super nervous. I was, sure. I think I had about 3 months training jiu-jitsu.
Wow. Wow.
And ended up that a tournament was going to happen. High and Gracie Cup. That was the tournament in São Paulo. And I was like, I had my teammates going to compete, so why not, right? That's right. What passed through my mind. It was, I remember the feeling. I still remember the feeling on like, what I'm doing here, right? 13 right, to right. 14 years old.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
I could be any other place. Like, what I'm doing, I literally signed up to fight.
Right, right, yeah.
That was my thought. And I ended up losing my first match. I don't remember much my first fight, probably right. because I was so nervous.
Sure.
I remember a couple of things.
Yeah.
My dad took some pictures. I have a video, so I know what happened.
Right.
But I just remember the feeling after, like a day after the day that everything happened. I was pretty upset. Like no one wants to lose, right?
Sure.
That was the first time there was playing something like an individual sport. As much we're talking about group, but I'm fighting by myself there, right?
Right.
Not playing soccer and everything. You have a lot of people around you. So my feeling was like feeling the defeat.
Sure.
And that was something that moved me a lot. I was like, I want to get better at this. So that just drives me to yeah. train more.
Right.
And you start to understand that winning is not the goal, right? It's the journey is the goal.
Sure.
And after that, just history, but it was, yeah, I have some good memories for sure.
Yeah. So when you're talking, I'm thinking of, so my mom, I've been involved in these different athletic things in my life. And one time I joined a diving team just because I wanted to dive and, but I had an affinity towards it. I was a good diver and I was young. I was like 12. So I signed up for the city tournament and, so I have dives on the 3 meter board and the 1 meter board. And so my mom and my grandmother are both Italian and they come down and I know that I'm ready for this meet. I'm excited. I'm doing my, but they have no idea what my diving is like. They never came to any practices, not because they weren't interested, but they don't know what to expect. And I think in their head, I'm doing like a cannonball or something. I don't think they really know what to expect. So I go there and anybody who speaks like diving, right? Like I'm doing a gainer, which is where you invert your rotation towards the board. And it's, if you get it wrong, you hit the board and it's a problem, right? And you can really hurt yourself. And so some kid before me tries to do a gainer, smashes his head on the board and I'm doing the same dive. But I nailed my dive and I was very happy about it. I don't think they really understood the complexity of that dive. So they didn't really react. But then I got on the up on the 3 meter board, which is about 10 feet up. And I have a 1.5 pike that I'm doing that is my best dive. And I get up there and I ripped it. I just did like I did as well as I was capable of doing it. And I come up out of the water to the crowd is like, they're cheering for me, except for two women, my grandmother and my mother, who are screaming at me, what are you doing? This is crazy. You're not doing this ever again. Like I could hear them. They were not excited about the dive. So I won the meet. I was very proud of myself, but it was among the last diving meets I ever had because they thought that it wasn't safe. So it might be a blessing that your mom didn't see you tournament because she might have said, no, you're going to learn to be a swimmer.
She saw training, like never.
She never came down this year.
No, because I was going, riding my bicycle when I was a kid to training. So I never depend on her or my dad to make me train because, again, I just love it. That was my life. Like,
right.
I was going to school in the morning, go back home, lunch, quick break, and start to have other activities. And jiu-jitsu was always there at 4 o'clock, 4 to 6. And right. I had box 8 to 10. So it was always like a long day, but I did that for years and just love it. So I was never expecting no one be able to do that for me, right? So sure. She never needed. It's not that, again, it's not that she never gave me all the support that always she did.
Right.
But like every mom, I remember the first time that I broke my toe, she was like, why are you doing that? You don't need to do this. You know, just try to protect.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. As we want. I mean, if that's absent from moms, that's a problem, right? So, right. You know, that protectiveness is a good quality. But I think when it comes to sports, well, your mom was an athlete at least. So she understood your drive and probably celebrated, even if she didn't go see you.
Maybe another thing that drives me to martial arts a lot was I still am, but now I have a different understanding, but I was super competitive, like when I was a kid. Not in a bad way, like get upset when I'm losing and everything, not dealing well.
Right.
In every sport, when you were upset, escalates to a fight, right? So I remember playing tennis against my brother. So we played tennis for many, many years, and a lot of members of my family. So it's the thing on our family when, well, we used to live in Brazil on weekends. We meet each other and play hours and hours playing doubles and everything.
Right.
But my brother, he's 4 years older than me, and he was always a better player.
Right.
So be able to beat him was always what I was looking, but almost never possible.
Right.
That was always like, I want to hit my racket on the floor and everything. And I was lucky also to have a great professor, great teacher in tennis that was always with us and teaching, giving the right words when I was feeling like that.
Yeah.
But you just fall in place like this, right? Because I was able to understand better that I couldn't react in that way at all.
Right.
I never did since day one, probably because I was just getting beat every single day for so long. But it just taught me so much. Everything that I can feel and understand today, like, is a big part of because of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. 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 It's funny, the family dynamic. My dad and his brothers, they're my father in particular, maybe the purest athlete, like outside of, I think if he had a different body, would have been a professional athlete in a set of different circumstances, really? But just like perfect balance. Not a large man, you know. So I think some of the sports he was best at didn't speak to him, but just like a beautiful athlete, moves terrifically. And his brothers were all great athletes too. And so as a kid, when we were around my uncles and that, sports was a big part. So you can talk about losing to that. And I can relate to that. And the way that holidays and get together would go, I'd show up with the uncles and then we play a game. So play basketball, soccer, some version of some game. And so there'd be this physical thing that among the older men would end up in a fight, frankly. So some brother would knock some other brother in a way they thought was aggressive and there would be some scuffling. But then we'd come back and we'd play chess. And so it was this idea, unspoken, but well, I just kicked your ass out on the field. And now I'm smarter than you two. And that I don't think of myself as competitive. It was a lot of fun. So I got a chance to participate in that. So I can appreciate some of what you're saying from my own life. And I don't think of myself as competitive, but I think people around me might disagree. So, I mean, in these early days, this becomes, you know, it informs a lot of your life, who you become as a person. It informs your professional life as well. But early on, I mean, other than competition, which is a natural place to be kind of afraid, was there anything that scared you about, like, was there anything that made you hesitant? Like, hey, I'm better, or not in the beginning, you were probably better at other sports, right? Because you're a beginner in jiu-jitsu, but you have years invested in these other sports. Was there anything about jiu-jitsu that kind of scared you and you thought, maybe this isn't for me, that you had to fight through?
I wouldn't say scary, but it was always a challenge, right? The everyday challenge there on trying to survive on the mats almost. Mm-hmm. Again, that was like 19, 18 years ago. The level of instruction as much great that it was.
Right.
And I still have contact with my professors in Brazil. It was just different, right? People wouldn't be paying attention so many on a different type of people that attend to the class like we do nowadays.
Right.
Right. The needs are different. It used to be something more just the stronger is going to be on a mat, right? So I would say like that was the challenge on the everyday, like being able, I remember the mat was upstairs, so it's really common in Brazil. Now, not anymore that much, but the jiu-jitsu schools, they were inside a workout gym.
Right.
Not like a jiu-jitsu school only, right? So you have all the equipments to work out, lift weights on the first floor, and then you go upstairs, you have the mat there. So I remember every time going there and start to go upstairs and like keep thinking on my mind, like, all right, are you really doing this again? Like, are you ready to do one more tough day and not knowing what going to expect and being embarrassing sometimes, which was something that probably I was putting on my hat, like, right? No one was teasing anything, but I think that was the biggest fear. Not necessarily a fear, but like try to understand how to embrace all this the everyday struggle.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, conversely, was there any particular moment that something clicked inside you? Like, do you have a memory of an epiphany of sorts, like where in this thing happened and then it was different? Like, was there anything like that happened to you?
I don't know if it's a particular moment, but I remember on every day having just more fun training.
Yeah.
Every day was a harder training, but a fun training, fun day. And the non-stop thinking about it.
Right.
Going home, think about the positions. Think about what you could do differently. Sleeping and sweeping my pillow side to side. Unconscious, right? And just like thinking that every day and having the guys that are training with me as a, especially like being young, right? Being 13, 14 years old and training with the adults, didn't have, again, that separation between the age groups. Have those guys as a mentor, right? Like, and see them, because in a lot of ways, I would say that jiu-jitsu in the 90s, so a little bit before I start, jiu-jitsu wasn't being looked as a good thing. Mm-hmm. Have like a really bad reputation.
Right.
In one, maybe one of the reasons because they didn't have many tournaments. So a lot of the jiu-jitsu practitioners, they were trying their jiu-jitsu on the street.
Sure.
So they even have a terminology in Brazil, they call the pit boys, right? Assimilative of the pit bulls, the dog.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Which is a big mistake, but that was how jiu-jitsu was looking. So I remember the first time talking to my grandpa and look, I'm doing jiu-jitsu. You're going to be a pit boy. That's bad. And bad in a way that the news were talking bad things about jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
So.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you kind of had to overcome the stigma because what people perceived might not have been the reality of it. Like
this guy's a doctor. This guy's a lawyer. This guy's a well-succeeded banker. So like, you're just not that bad, right?
Right. Did you have any, you talked about the Hiron Cup, right? Did you have any brushes with famous jiu-jitsu players in those early days? Did you get to?
On white belts, no. Blue belts, no. At least I don't remember. But purple belts, I fought some guys that now they're big in jiu-jitsu. I have some local guy in Arizona, but he's been made his name, Jake Watson. He's an incredible athlete. Yeah. Have a lot of guys that now are really good in jiu-jitsu and well though famous that we used to see each other in really small local tournaments.
Oh, how fun.
Like even then sometimes being lower ranked than I, but those guys just climbed everything so fast, right?
Yeah. I think about like levels of athleticism, you know, I mean, there are gifted, there are physically gifted people out there and they do things differently than the rest of humanity, you know, and I boxed for a little bit and I got a chance to box as a kid underneath a really like he was a well-known trainer, but he was not famous. And this is like, I don't know, 81, 80, 82. And I got a chance to, I was in his gym and then Thomas Hearns came through town and I got a chance to like, he came in to, work out with this, you know, work out with the guy who trained me, which was a fun experience. And I got to hit the bag next to this professional boxer, you know, and the sound of a professional boxer hitting the bag is a unique sound. Like, it does not sound like other people hitting that bag, right. You know? Which I don't know, just, I think about my own development as an athlete. I've got a chance to brush up against people who.
But I will say this, I had the opportunity to train with the best in the world.
Yeah.
That's another really cool part about jiu-jitsu. You can have an easy access with your idols, right? Like, nowadays, yeah. If you want to play a basketball, you won't be able to call LeBron James to play right. A basketball game, right?
Yes.
And jiu-jitsu, you can do that. And especially, again, being Gracie Barra since early on, and Professor Libby, Professor Canela, Farol, Kiko, all my professors there in Brazil, they were high-level competitors, but they were always bringing people from, like, Professor Marcio Feitosa from Rio de Janeiro. He's a Jiu-Jitsu Hall of Fame. I think he has more than 8 finals at the world as a black belt. So be able to train those guys. And you don't realize that back then, right?
Right.
Just, especially being a kid, just one more guy that you is beating you. You're right. Having fun. But after, when you think about it, it's like, that was a really cool experience. And it's still happening, right? We still can do that. We still do that.
Right. Well, terrific. Well, I'm interested in all of the stories about your journey from being, you know, at the beginning to, you know, as you've gone along and you've brushed up against, as you say, your idols, which I think is a terrific and a motivating thing. I mean, yeah. I got a chance to compete and do certain athletic activities with people who were a million times better at what I was. And I knew that I was never, ever going to be as good as some of these people that I competed with. However, it was it was fun. You know, at our first episode, like, why get involved with jiu-jitsu? First thing is, it's enjoyable, you know, and it's fun. And your road could take you unexpectedly to meet people that, you know, who knows where they're going. And you don't necessarily have to be better than them to enjoy that experience. You know, I think at this moment in history in jiu-jitsu's development, I think that it is on its way that it is going to become a bigger and bigger sport, which may, but for right now, it feels like it's a pretty small global community.
It is.
You know, it feels like, which I think is an attractive element. Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, I would just add one thing on your question that now I think I can answer better.
Okay.
When you ask me on what was something click about jiu-jitsu and everything.
Right.
Loving everything around jiu-jitsu and training and this and that. But I took a little break during college, okay, of jiu-jitsu. And never all the years without training, but maybe I was training for a month and like 3 months off. I trained for 2 months and like 5 months off. It was super on and off during all those 4 years of college. But after I graduated, actually my last year of college, I come back to train pretty often, come back to competing and everything. I graduate, start to work. But I was lucky enough to be able to make my schedule my work. And more I was seeing myself putting less hours to work and more hours to train. Right. Like, oh my God, I have something wrong going on here in my life. And that's when I felt, okay, let's make some changes.
Yeah. Well, how wonderful to be able to align your life with what's, you know, inside you in that way. It's a discipline. I think that often we feel like that's not available to us, but you have to be self-aware enough to realize, like, hey, I'm investing myself here rather than there. So I should go where my heart leads me, in a sense. Well, I enjoyed all of these stories. So you and I are going to do this more of these, but let's conclude this one. So, Professor, thank you for telling us about the early days and some of your journey to where you are today in your jiu-jitsu life.
No, thank you so much. It was really fun to be sharing some stories, so much more to talk about it and everything. So little by little, we're going to try to expose ourselves a little bit more on episodes, and maybe you can relate something on what you have to say.
Yeah, you need to hear Professor's story, and you know, jiu-jitsu became such a big part of his life, and that story we think is interesting, compelling. But for those of you that, you know, are listening and listen to perhaps the previous episode, we also want you to think about it in terms of how it might fit into your life, and that if you haven't given it a try and you're thinking all of us are as compulsive as the professor and I. Sometimes I think, you know, people like us, we throw ourselves into our athletic life wholeheartedly. But if you just want jiu-jitsu to taste it, to just try it, you know, we hope that these things, these stories encourage you to give it a shot. So, you know, come off the sidelines, go find a class. And because even jiu-jitsu for 1, 2, 3 times a week will have a big impact on your life. So it's been transformative to some of us, but we know, as we've said before, jiu-jitsu is in fact for everybody. If you're on your journey currently, we want you to keep going, because it only gets better the more you practice and the more years you you put in. Do you agree?
Couldn't agree more.
All right. Thank you all. We'll see you at the next episode.